Today is July 27th, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover the 11th consecutive night of U.S. strikes on Iran and Trump's new automatic escalation doctrine tied to the Strait of Hormuz, Ukraine's campaign that has disabled roughly 42.7% of Russian refining capacity, and Secretary of State Rubio's public repudiation of the Trump-Putin Anchorage framework in Manila. U.S. Central Command struck Iranian targets for an 11th consecutive night, according to CNBC, a stretch that now exceeds every prior sustained strike campaign of this war. Over just 48 hours, CENTCOM hit 170 confirmed Iranian targets, 80 on the first night, concentrated on coastal radar sites and fast attack boat facilities, and 90 on the second night as the campaign expanded geographically to Bandar Abbas, Konarak, Chabahar, and Bushehr. More than 60 IRGC fast attack boats were destroyed in that window. The strategic calculus here is that Washington is no longer treating Hormuz strikes as isolated incidents to be answered case by case. Per Axios, Trump has instituted a mechanical doctrine. Any Iranian attack on shipping through the strait now automatically triggers U.S. destruction of an Iranian bridge or power plant, explicitly including targets near Tehran. The Treasury reinforced this by revoking the general license that had allowed Iran billions of dollars a month in legitimate oil sales. What makes this fragile, rather than decisive, is Iran's negotiating posture. Parliament Speaker Ghalibaf has taken a maximalist line, saying the Strait, quote, will not return to its pre-war status, and that real security requires the absence of U.S. forces altogether, not the language of a defeated actor. And that's despite an economy, the IMF projects will contract 6.1% in real terms this year, alongside what Al Jazeera calls the longest recorded nationwide internet shutdown of any state. Building on that, none of the four classic signals of broken political will – unilateral concessions, hardliner capitulation, acknowledged defeat, or halted retaliation – appear anywhere in the confirmed record. Instead, IRGC Brigadier General Syed Majid Mousavi has threatened that U.S. infrastructure strikes would trigger power outages across U.S.-aligned Gulf states. Oil prices had swung as low as $68 a barrel before this current escalation, which tells you the market was pricing in uncertainty, not resolution. Bahrain's Defense Force has already accused Iran of, quote, heinous attacks on civilian targets. And Iranian state media has carried threats of symmetrical retaliation against regional energy facilities, raising real odds that Kuwait and Bahrain get pulled more directly into this. More importantly, unconfirmed U.S. intelligence reporting alleges Russia may have supplied Iran with targeting data used against CIA-linked sites in Saudi Arabia and Iraq, and Foreign Minister Lavrov did not deny this when asked directly. If that holds up, it fuses Hormuz and Ukraine into a single-axis confrontation narrative rather than two separate crises. This is the third strike and ceasefire cycle since the war began on February 28th, an April 7th and 8th ceasefire, a late May memorandum that collapsed July 7th, and now this 11-night campaign. Stanford's Abbas Milani predicted back in March that Iran's government was too exhausted to sustain conflict. A ceasefire did follow, and then collapsed twice more. The pattern that emerges is that economic exhaustion among the Iranian population doesn't automatically neutralize a hardline faction's ability to sabotage a negotiated pause. On the Russia-Ukraine front, the numbers are frankly staggering. Ukraine has struck all 10 of Russia's largest refineries, and per Ukraine's general staff via Medusa, roughly 42.7% of Russia's projected refining capacity is now disabled, with cumulative losses near $13.5 billion since August of last year. Russian fuel production is down as much as 25% year-on-year as of June, forcing license plate-based rationing across at least 8 regions, including Oryol, Nizhny Novgorod, Kirov, and Kursk. In a single night, Ukraine reportedly destroyed 500 Russian gasoline tankers on the M14 highway. And in under a week, 5 separate strike waves hit Wildberries, Russia's dominant e-commerce platform. A company analyst, Jamie Shea, says accounts for roughly 9% of Russian GDP, with one single strike estimated to have wiped out $4 to $6 billion in value. The strategic calculus here connects directly to Kremlin politics. Putin's March ultimatum demanding oligarchs help fund the war broke an implicit 2-decade bargain, wealth protection in exchange for political loyalty. that Wildberries stakes are held by presidential administration figures Anton Vino and Alexei Gromov shows just how fused state power and commercial interests have become, and now that fusion is directly exposed to Ukrainian targeting. Building on that, a leaked 2026 conscription document obtained by TV Rain shows districts can now buy out service obligations for roughly $1,300 per person, down sharply from about $6,000 in 2025. CNN reports Russian recruitment fell 20% year-on-year in the first quarter of this year, despite signing bonuses reaching $80,000. RFERL describes a shift toward forcible busification roundups near Penza, and Kyiv Post cites military bloggers putting average frontline assault soldier survival time at 20 to 35 minutes. More importantly, Russia's post-Soviet sphere is visibly contracting. Armenia has frozen its CISTO participation, and Prime Minister Pashinyan won roughly 50% of the vote in June, despite an alleged Kremlin threat of a, quote, Ukrainian scenario. Kazakhstan is building a Trans-Caspian Middle Corridor that bypasses Russia entirely. And reporting from Foreign Policy and the Moscow Times suggests Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov, age 49, may be suffering a terminal illness, raising the prospect of a succession crisis in a region where two prior wars killed an estimated 160,000 people, per the Jamestown Foundation. Commentary drawing on Yugoslavia's 1992-94 collapse, when industrial output fell 40% in 3 months and monthly inflation approached 313 million% by January of 94, frames Russia's current improvisation, fuel rationing, coercive quotas, teachers pulling shifts at gas stations as a structurally similar reflex. But analysts caution Russia's larger, more diversified economy and continued trade with China and India make full hyperinflationary collapse unlikely. The more probable trajectory, as one analyst put it, is strain, not collapse. And this is where the diplomatic track matters most. Rubio and Lavrov met in Manila on July 23rd for about 35 minutes with no joint progress. Per Atlantic Council analyst Adrian Karatnicki, Rubio called Russia's prior demands unacceptable, and now even more unacceptable, effectively abandoning the Trump-Putin Anchorage framework and calling for something new entirely. Lavrov, for his part, insisted continued Western arms deliveries are unacceptable and that Ukrainian strikes justify expanded Russian operations rather than negotiation. A lying Kremlin spokesman Peskov echoed, stating flatly there's, quote, no talk about some sort of new dynamics. The strategic calculus here, according to Karatnicki, is that Washington's internal framing has flipped. Trump once viewed Ukraine as the less realistic negotiating partner. Now, Ukrainian battlefield resilience, combined with Russia's unmet 2025 territorial goals, has shifted that perception toward Russia. Karatnicki describes Ukraine as holding what he calls financial escalation dominance through sustained Western financing, even as Russia retains manpower dominance. A rough equilibrium, not a decisive phase. Yet domestic gridlock in Washington over executive tariff authority has stalled a Senate sanctions package targeting Russian banks and secondary tariffs up to 100% on buyers of Russian oil, according to Senator Richard Blumenthal, effectively gifting Moscow more time. The EU's 21st sanctions package targets 90 Russian banks, but still hasn't touched Russia's nuclear fuel sector after 4.5 years of war. And separately, the Russian oil price cap could roughly double from $41 to near $85 a barrel under an August 1st recalculation formula, weakening enforcement further, just as pressure needs to tighten. Meanwhile, NATO is trying to close its own capability gap. At the July 7th and 8th summit in Ankara, 12 nations committed $50.66 billion over the next decade to develop deep precision strike capabilities. The shifting geography of power here is straightforward. Existing systems like Storm Shadow at 550 kilometers or Taurus at 500 kilometers cannot reach deep into Russian territory from forward positions. A missile exceeding 2,000 kilometers in range, which the UK and Germany are jointly developing, would put Russian command centers and air bases within reach from Poland, Romania, or the Baltics, raising the deterrence threshold considerably. Still, the Kiel Institute estimates a further $500 billion is needed beyond current European spending to close 10 critical capability gaps, meaning this pact addresses only one slice of Europe's rearmament challenge. So here's what to watch in the next 48 hours. Iranian retaliation against Hormuz shipping remains the single clearest tripwire. If it happens, Trump's automatic bridge and power plant strike policy gets tested in real time for the first time, and that response, whatever it looks like, will tell us more about the actual shape of this conflict than another night of confirmed target counts. Watch oil prices and Bahrain's posture closely. Both are early warning signals for whether Kuwait or Bahrain get drawn in directly. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.